Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the Cobras of Fire podcast. Rock's not dead. It's been hiding. And you found it. Well done. Well done.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire, or welcome back, I should say. This is part two of the 1991 year in review. I am Baco, and I will soon be joined by the ever loquacious and sexy voiced Loose Cannon. If you haven't checked out part one, I highly recommend that you do so. I mean, it's free. You just got to go back, got to download that one first, or just stream it however you want to do it. But if you don't, you're just going to kind of be lost. You know, it's like, hey, they're talking about this Nirvana thing, and I'm not really sure. I just, you know, you're just not going to be able to keep up with the plot, so to speak. Anyway, it's available at SoundCloud, you know, iTunes, I don't know, other places that Luce usually tells me to say, and I forget. Just type in Cobras and Fire podcast, and you'll find all sorts of links through your Google machine. And don't forget to swing by our Facebook page and click like. And please, please, for the love of all thing Cobras, swing by iTunes and leave us a nice review if you like what you hear, because it makes Loose Cannon, you know, extremely happy, which also makes Loose Cannon much easier to deal with, and therefore you're also doing me a solid. So head on over to iTunes to find the Cobras and Fire podcast and say some wonderful five-star things about just how smart, intelligent, and good-looking we are. And if you feel like throwing in a dick reference, well, I'll take that as like a personal homage. Anyway, I'm just getting word now that we are ready to join Cobras and Fire, 1991 year. I'm getting two fingers. What does two fingers mean? I don't know it. Okay, now I'm getting one finger. And yes, we are going to join Cobras and Fire, 1991 year in review, part two in progress. Enjoy.
All right, that was Searching with My Good Eye Closed by Soundgarden.
They're from Seattle.
Yes.
But not anymore. I think the singer lives in France.
He moved and has made consistently shitty solo albums, including an album called Scream, produced by Timbaland. It's proof in advertising. If you listen to it, you'll scream.
I mean, have you ever heard that?
Yeah, of course. I love Chris Cornell.
It's a mess, though.
He can do almost no wrong by me, even though he continues.
That? You like that one, though?
No. Let me finish my sentence. He can do almost no wrong by me, even though he continues to do wrong by me.
Okay. Have you heard his new one? Is it any good or no?
No, I actually... I love that one song they play on the radio. Fuck. Oh, whatever.
It's called
but
Fuck.
The point being is that I just love the sound of his voice. It was almost like hearing Axel on Chinese Democracy made you forget for a moment the first time you heard it that it was only Axel. You know,
yes.
It was like just hearing that voice was kind of cool after a decade. But
let's talk about Axel real quick. What came out also in 1991?
Did we cover
for we're not
Use Your Illusion at all? We should do an episode on that.
Yeah, we probably should. So we're not going to cover that. We're not going to really cover that, but we have two Guns N' Roses episodes for those that are new to the show. One that talks about the reunion in full, or whatever you want to call it. And then the second one is we do Purge Your Illusion, where I almost break Baco by trying to cut the Use Your Illusion albums down to 12 tracks, correct?
I tried to kill my childhood. By childhood, yes. I mean my early 20s.
Were those albums, did those albums do okay, or did they suffer? Did they suffer that year?
Well, you got to remember, I mean, because what did Appetite end up selling? Right around 20 million, too? I mean, these barely sold 20 million combined.
Exactly. I mean, come on.
If no Nirvana, it would have been 40 million.
Yeah, unfortunately, there were people showing up at midnight at stores because there was, you know, that was the only way you could get them. It was just a bad distribution
center.
That's the
only way you could get them.
That's the only way
we're only selling GNR after midnight.
That's right. You can
They're
only
gremlins.
Get because grunge had completely clogged the distribution channels.
We don't feed them or we let them get wet.
But, there's another, but again, another, now how the ones we mentioned so far, like whether you think these are your favorite albums commercially and critically or whatever.
Right,
you want
no, that
to say.
Was our point is that like
Ozzy,
you know, Rock did
Metallica,
survive.
Guns N' Roses.
I mean, we can even talk about what happened after 91, like, you know, because even if you buy the argument, it was still late, so you could defend it going, well, these records came out before. Okay, you got to remember, like, what, it was late 92, if I remember right, and you, of course, you can correct me because you usually do. But I think the cover of Signs on Five Man Acoustical Jam by Tesla, that was their biggest hit.
I think that was 91. Yes, it was 91. No. The Five Man Acoustical Jam came out in 91.
That would have made my list.
As well, yeah, no, that was another one that was huge, and that kind of started the whole Unplugged thing for the
exactly, yeah, that started the Unplugged thing that a lot of the grunge bands got credit for.
Yeah,
it really started? I think GNR with Lies really kind of gave it the boost.
I don't know, but that was another huge album that year, and that came out like near the end. I think I remember having that during the summer or at least the fall, and
fall of 92.
And I remember that mostly because I know it was in the fall because I didn't have a house. I was homeless. I remember that.
The Hoosier burn.
But yeah, so then you also have, like we mentioned, you know, briefly, you know, you got Van Halen Fuck came out. That was big. You got...
they're kind of bigger than metal, though, don't you think? They're almost like one of those...
That's true. True. But still, it that did really well, but even for them, that was as popular.
You're not going to believe it.
What?
We're both wrong.
What do you mean?
The Five Man Acoustical Jam.
1990. God damn it!
I knew I was in college.
All right.
November 1990.
Okay, well that avoided us being corrected later. So thank you very much for checking that out.
I would encourage people to still correct us,
but definitely crept into 91. Definitely crept in. That album. But yeah, so one of the bands you had on your list of ones that were signaled the death is did you ever like Extreme, even Porno Graffiti?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Cuz that one is, and I didn't realize it until the I started looking at discographies. Do you know who the producer was on that?
Oh, fuck.
It was Michael Wagner.
Yeah, I was okay. Now it's Pornography, right? Because that's how they say it.
Pornography.
In the song.
Pornography. Did I say Pornography?
Yeah, but I've heard a lot of people say it that way, including the singer of the band, as far as like talking about it.
Pornography. Yeah, yeah. But it should be Pornography, right? Is that your argument?
No. I think Pornography, because that's the pun. Pornography,
yes.
Pornography.
Yes.
Pornography sounds like two words.
It's a tongue twister, I'll tell you that much.
I put them on the list because their first record, which I actually dig,
badly produced, very, very badly produced.
The production even is okay with me. I can usually get past that if I like the songs, which I do. But the lyrics are so silly.
It's
nursery rhymes. It makes Andrew Dice Clay's jokes seem like, you know, very deep.
So yeah, so I'll just touch on this a little bit, but. Did you ever read that article that I did about the great band, terrible brand of Extreme?
Yes.
You did. So what was your what were your thoughts?
I can't believe Loose Cannon actually sat down and wrote something.
That was many years ago. That was a reprint, yeah, essentially. Okay. But yeah, no, I was basically breaking down that thing that was funny about Extreme was that I heard this that album. I guess this album came out in 1990. From my
Pornography, research. Yeah.
Okay, but I hadn't heard it until 91, and most people, I think More Than Words hit 91.
Which is that sounds all right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when people
Get
started.
The Funk Out was the first single and
Decadence.
Decadent Dance was the first single.
Right. So none of those hit, and so the first, you know,
surprise.
The first impression for most people was the song More Than Words. So people bought this. My whole thing was that it was a bad brand because I guarantee all these girls and everybody bought this, and the first thing they get is songs like Little Jack Horny, you know, it's a Monster talking about just masturbation, you know, your favorite subject and everything, and thanks. They got obviously the name of it, Pornography. You got right. Susie Wants Her All Day Sucker. You know, you got blowjob songs. You got He-Man Woman Hater. But you've got all this kind of stuff, and it's just like whatever you thought it was going to be was completely the polar opposite, I think. And my argument was that this album, more than any other album, and I would love somebody to challenge this. If you go into any of the, not that they exist anymore, but if you ever went under the section that was E, there's more returned used CDs of Extreme 2 Pornography than anything I've ever seen.
I will challenge this. Let me see real quick.
Go ahead.
Arrested Development. Do you remember that bad? That
well,
band?
That's not even the same genre.
They
I'm
sold
hard rock.
Well, no, but just in genre. Okay.
Why Arrested Development though?
Well, they sold 10 million records and because they won a Grammy. They were like Lauryn Hill. They were the band that you wanted to like even though you couldn't. So you would buy the record because you felt it made you like credible or something.
Okay.
But yeah, of the 10 million, 9.5 million of them were resold to record stores.
I'm talking about just people returning them. Is my point is that people got it and they're like, "What the fuck is this?" And you know,
didn't think Wholehearted kept them in. That was their best song in the record.
That was a pretty. I like that better than More Than Words. If I'm
gonna that is my favorite Extreme song.
Is Wholehearted? Yep. It's a great song. Yeah, but like what, besides that, like a rock song on this, because I do want to feature one song from this album, because I think it's
a 1990 record, though, man. We're 91.
Fuck it, man. It's 91 in culture. We're talking about
all right,
in culture.
Pick the fucking song. It'll be on there. What do you want?
Come on. You pick one. I'm going to give
you one.
You
picked a couple. This is your... shit. I don't know. If you're not
going to
pick,
you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to pick your masturbation song. It's a Monster.
Okay. We'll be right back. we're back in 1990.
All right, so we've time traveled from my push, just like I say that Facelift was really a 91 album. Same with Pornograffiti, because those things didn't start hitting as far as culture goes.
Oh, but then can we do It Ain't Like That?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Why not? That's a great fucking song.
I usually have a hard time convincing you. We've already jumped a year back two times in a row. Ladies and gentlemen, Cobras and Fire presents 1991. Yeah, ish.
Ish and 90. We're not good at calendars. All right, Baco. So what you want to talk about next? I'm throwing it to you. We're bands.
All right, you know what? Fuck it. We've avoided Pearl Jam this long. What did you think of the album 10?
First impression, I was not a big fan of the song Alive, but, you know, I loved Even Flow for a single, and the fact that that video was actually a live version of it. And I know that's the song.
And it was a different recording, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a different recording of it. I thought that was really cool. But really, you know, the whole... I know this is a stretch here, but, you know, I didn't really pay attention that much about the differences of everything. And I just thought, you know, the riff was awesome. I love the guitar solo in Alive. And I know it's inspired, you know, by, you know, whatever you want to say. It's snaked from either She or also from a Door song, too, that I can't remember. Oh, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Five from One or something.
Five from One or whatever. But it's the same kind of breakdown. And I remember hearing it and actually being like, God, this sounds familiar. And it was driving me nuts forever because of the fact that I'm a huge Kiss fan. I heard She like over and over again. But I remember just not being drawn in until that. And it definitely wasn't. You know, the whole thing about good times and partying and that upbeat kind of stuff, that was a big change. But I was like, you know, and the imagery, I definitely wasn't drawn to as much to these type of bands. But that's a great fucking song. And it really, at the same time, wasn't Ugly Kid Joe out in 91 too or not? Or
was that 92? Yeah, no, 91 was Ugly Kid Joe for sure.
Okay, so the reason I say that is that was like, that video was kind of like the surf thing and the beach and Ugly Kid Joe climbing. So I didn't really – I know this sounds funny in retrospect, but I didn't see that much separation as far as the imagery from that – at least that video for that. I know it's like, yeah, Ugly Kid Joe.
When you heard the music, there had to be some separation.
Even Flow was just a – it's just a – anyway, so that was the one that drew me in, and I got it. And I got to tell you, like I was never – I love 10 now, but what really drew me in for Pearl Jam wasn't a couple of years later, and that was with Verses. Verses just grabbed me by the nuts, and
I think 10's a better record, but I love them both.
I do. I think so too, but at the time, I think Verses was so much tighter, like they were like 3-minute songs, and there was just a little bit of a different animal, to use a pun, the song.
Were you aware of the whole Mother Love Bone thing at the time, or did...
I was. Because
for me,
yes.
I had to go backwards from Pearl Jam.
I went Pearl Jam and then... Oh, you mean, did you go Pearl Jam, then Motherbone?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I definitely want to, you know, whatever you want to say, that album nobody knew about until Pearl Jam came out, for the most part, I would say, unless you were in Seattle. So I definitely want to feature a song from that band, 100%. And I liked Mother...
Which one? Do you want to do Crown of
Thorns? Well, it's not to Crown of Thorns just because that's part of my also presentation of when grunge finally made the shift.
Bone China.
That's a great song. Shangri-La. Whatever you want to pick. I don't care. There's a lot of great songs. Pick one.
Stardog Champion.
Where my father lies, he was a wartime hero.
Back to Pearl Jam, though, with 10, did you, I don't know, I didn't get it at first, but when I did, I really got into it.
Me too. It took a little bit. It was a grower, right?
Yeah. Do you like the song Release Me?
Fuck yeah.
Thank you.
How can you see this now? Oh, I am myself like you.
Is a perfect 10 for me. It's a great album. And by the way, have you ever heard did you hear the one they came out with about 5 or 6 years ago that was completely remixed by Brendan O'Brien, their producer?
No,
since 10?
I know what you're talking about, but no, I've never heard it.
You must get that. That album, the original version of 10, is flat. And you know how the kick-ass the production is on like Verses, and he's been their producer on every album since.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Imagine that with that production. Just buy it immediately. Spend your $10. It's worth every penny. And the packaging is really cool on that one too. So it brings new life into those songs. So, and you'll hear them, you'll be like, this is how it should have sounded. Even though you love it, I think you really like it.
And so, there you have it, like a Copers and Fire endorsement.
Yes. Pump some more money into that corporation.
Well, we didn't talk too much about it, but Joe Walsh had a bit of a resurgence in 1991. Do you know what I'm talking about, Luz?
You did mention it when we were offline a second ago, and I did not know that that was as new. I mean, not new, but I thought that was a 70s song. Like, yeah, seriously, like you just mentioned this?
He
break
basically
it down.
Did kind of try to replicate one song, you know.
Right. What is it?
Well, he tried to replicate Life's Been Good, but...
Correct.
I don't know. It's from the album Ordinary Average Guy, and it's called... Ordinary Average Guy.
Ordinary Average Guys.
Ukraine, we're just ordinary average guys.
You know what he also tried to replicate again was, and did you ever listen to Analog Man?
After you told me to, yes. I don't remember too much about it, but it was actually a pretty solid record.
The one song that was also kind of a rewrite was called Lucky That Way. You ever heard that?
Well, if it was on there, I heard it.
Okay. Well, that's kind of like the part three of...
That
trilogy of similar type songs. They're all catchy as hell.
Well, and another old timer for you there, Luce, that was still kicking some butt in 1991, as somebody lamer than me might say.
Mm-hmm.
David Lee Roth had a record out. He had a hot shot new guitar player named Jason Becker. Do you know what I'm talking about?
A little ain't enough.
Did you ever get a chance to dig into that?
The Jason Becker part or the album?
Just the record.
Yeah, I remember getting it, and I worked at Power 95 in the
Power.
Yes, at the midnight shift right after I graduated from high school for that summer, and they had the promo CDs, and I remember seeing that one with a little devil on the front of it, and he's like. When you work there and you're an intern and everything, they're like, whatever we're never going to play on the radio, you can have. And did the album do okay? Because I don't remember doing that great.
Sales-wise, I don't think so. But I remember he had I Say Mama, A Little Late Enough was the first single.
I love that song. It's a fun song.
It's okay. But I actually really, really enjoy the song Sensible Shoes.
Some sensible shoes. empty. Lost my soul when I walked out on you. I need some sensible shoes. Sensible shoes. Ones that lead me back to you. Sensible shoes. God, you're the only lover that was ever true. I need some sensible shoes.
I mean, probably the best thing David Lee Roth ever did was leave Van Halen and then fire Billy Sheehan and
then fire Steve Vai.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man. So what's another release this year?
Well, Great White released their record Hooked, which, I don't know, you're not that big of a fan. Is that right?
No, I'm not that big of a fan. I don't dislike them. I just never got hooked by them 100%. I actually... Yes, little pun. But the thing I did not know until I think like last year is I never knew that Once Bitten, Twice Shy was a cover.
Shut up.
I didn't. I thought that was like, I had no
idea.
Don't
get me wrong. When I heard their version, I didn't know the original version. But it was like talked about so much. Like, oh, it's our cover of the blah, blah, blah.
Who the hell did it first?
Was it
Slade? A nobody band. I don't even think so. It was like even a nobody band beyond that. Yeah, but yeah, no, I never knew it was a cover. So that's it's just kind of funny. It's like one of those.
They
bands
have, by
Quiet
the way,
Riot.
A ton of those songs in their catalog. There's at least one on every album that isn't theirs.
Really? Yeah,
I love his voice. Hooked, but
Jack Russell's voice is great. And
anyway,
continue about what?
This is my favorite record by them.
Okay, and
you know none of the songs, huh?
You know, I think I have a few. I don't have it in front of me.
Desert Moon was
That's a good song.
One that was they were playing when the club lit on fire.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I've always liked Desert Moon, but
I did not know that. I did not know that that factoid.
And there's like there's an ELO cover at the end. I can't remember what it's called, but whatever. Well, let's move on to. The Red Hot Chili Peppers released probably the pinnacle of their... It has to be, right? I mean, Blood Sugar Sex
commercial?
Magik.
No, yeah, just, it's like that.
I think in general. I mean, even if you're like a diehard fan, don't you have to admit this is their Sgt. Peppers?
this and
After this, Kella, they basically released the same record for 20 years.
I mean, Californication, that was another huge one.
A lot of records and songs with the word California in it.
Exactly, that's the whole thing. I think they showed one of those pie charts. You ever see those thing where it's like a big circle and it shows number of songs with California, and it's just one color like that for Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're right. But yeah, no, this is kind of the album too that I think I've mentioned before that kind of, I guess it wasn't the beginning, but I think that rock bands grabbed on to, hey, let's put 17 songs on 17 songs on a record though.
Yeah,
there's a lot of filler on this. I love, my favorite track on it actually is the title track, which doesn't get played that much, or it doesn't.
Suck a baby,
sex magic. I don't like Suck My Kiss,
but I think if you want to go back a little, I don't like Suck My Kiss either. By the way, you go back a little bit though to their previous record, Mother's Milk. That is kind of a calling card to say, you know what, things are going to change. Because they had a little bit of a hit with the Stevie Wonder cover. And that was also around the time that the Beastie Boys came out. And shortly after that was followed by, like, Faith No More. Plus, you had thrash kind of making its way. And a lot of stuff kind of came to a head in 90 and 91. And all that was kind of an opposite reaction to the stuff we're talking about with the Dawkins and the Poison and stuff like that. And what I'm saying is that, like, almost like a weather forecast, you could see it coming, especially in hindsight.
I mean, it was a lot of different things going on. Like, for example, Attack of the Killer Bees came out this year.
Oh, right.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. They had a little Public Enemy in there that did all their B-sides. And that was definitely a little left field too, right? I mean,
sure.
All that kind of stuff that you're talking about, the whole Faith No More, and I didn't think about that.
And all these things kind of were developing, almost like a thunderstorm kind of coming. And then, like, Nirvana, you know, because Nirvana's always called upon because they had the monster record at the beginning of the change, of the official change. But there were signs well before that. But going back to Blood Sugar Sex Magik, because, you know, I kind of use them as kind of an example of, like, you could kind of see that they were doing something that was going to get, you know, a lot of the same guys that liked that music. Like, yeah, they liked, you know, Rat and Twisted Sister, but suddenly the Beastie Boys came along and they said, this is what I want. You know, anyway, but that kind of ties into our whole theme. But with the Blood Sugar Sex Magik record, I love the song, If You Have to Ask. I love the song, the greeting song.
I'm on the mound, I'll make it for my love.
Lovely Man, I Could Have Lied. All of those are just great, and those aren't the hits. You know, so what are your thoughts on any of those?
No, I like the album a lot. I could probably cut at least five songs out of it. But I remember, for whatever reason, again, one of my memories was, and I know this is, was we had a pool table in the basement of the house that caught on fire.
Oh my God, the fire.
And I remember listening to this.
That's a real thing, by the way.
What's a real thing?
The fire. This is a horrible tragedy in your life.
It's not a tragedy. It's 25 years ago. But the point, nobody was hurt. It was just things. That's my point about the Purge is shit is just shit for the most part.
Yeah, you don't pictures, take it with you, do you?
It just
pictures it makes, now. It makes you think. Seriously, it makes you like think that. I was right about that. You're like, hey, there's a picture of like me with my granddaughter. Ah, burn it.
Well, anyway, we had I guess some relatives have some copies of evidence that I was a child at some point. But the point being is that I remember playing this album like in rotation, playing pool like in the basement and everything like that, and it just fucking flowed. Like I remember liking this, and again, like it be it grunge or whatever it is, it was just there was more stuff coming out that was just different than but on the same token, on the flip side, think about this. A greatest hits package, Decade of Decadence, okay? Motley Crue. That album was big too, and that's just a greatest hits package. They had
a song on there that was new for the record that you like?
I did like Primal Scream. They put a video out for that. They also did the remix of Home Sweet Home. And my point is, though, is that sold several million albums that year. And
Rat had one that year, too.
Yeah. Was that a greatest hits? Was that the Rat and Roll?
Well, they both went 81-91 on their title.
Okay. Well, then that was probably Rat and Roll.
It was called
then.
Decade of Decadence and Rat. I can't remember what they called theirs, but they both used 81-91 in the title.
But again, I mean, this is when the record industry was just printing money, if you think about it. Like, they were just putting out the same, these packages. And
even Columbia House was sending unrequested records to people's front doors, too.
This is true. So, I'm going to throw this out there, too, is I don't really, I think that the real sign that there was a big shift was one specific compilation that came out, not in 91, but 92, that really was the complete shift. Now, I know 91 was Lollapalooza, correct? That was the first one?
Yep.
Okay, so June 30th, 1992, I've got Wikipedia pulled up here. What do you think compilation album came out that year? It was a soundtrack.
It's not. No, Bill and Ted was 91. So
we'll touch on that in a second too. But my point is that
go for it. I don't know.
I don't think that I'll just leave. I'll just read some of the tracks. Wood, Breathe.
Oh, Seasons. Singles.
Okay, that one. Paul Westerberg, Chris Cornell. That Mother Love Bone was on there. Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Mudhoney. I know that your boy from the Replacements is on here. So
he's already said his name, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Screaming Trees, Smashing Pumpkins. This was just kind of the album that I think said, here, there's a mainstream movie. You've got all these artists together. This is where it's going forward. But that's a good. But my point of that is just what you just said. The Bill and Ted's was just a year earlier, and that was kind of like the same kind of thing, like a soundtrack that had the popular bands of the time or whatever.
That was more of kind of like – that actually is almost a perfect segue between the two, don't you think? I think the Bill and Ted soundtrack is almost like that perfect center of a tornado. It's like this weird like conflux between what was happening and what was about to come. And I don't think soundtracks are typically like anything but garbage.
Correct.
And that one at least reaches okaydom.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's okay. Yeah. It's listenable,
but yeah, no, that's a perfect thing. I like that. Like from Bill and Ted spawned singles, sort of. You know what I mean? Like there was a.
I do like the single soundtrack better, but.
Oh yeah, but I mean, I actually went and after we discussed this a little bit last week, and I put on that you know, it starts with Shout It Out by Slaughter, which is the second song that Slaughter
did. Probably the worst song I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, my God. That song is... what I think is amusing is that not once...
My cat tried to commit suicide while I was listening to it.
But actually...
Children flee when that song is playing.
I'm actually okay with the song until the chorus kicks in and the end part when it all accelerates and gets faster and faster. Come on, shout it out. Horrible. But the point is
horribler and horribler.
Yes. But the funniest part about it is the fact that not once but twice Slaughter has come out with songs that almost are the same title as a Kiss song. The whole, you know, Sleep All Night. What is it? How's that the silly
up
song?
All night, sleep all day.
Up All Night, Sleep All Day, Rock and Roll All Night. Shout It Out Loud. It even like sounds like it on the chorus.
You gotta shut me down.
Shut down, shut down, down. So that kicks it off.
Where are you going, kitties?
God, I forgot that part. Is that why your cat runs?
Put down those razor blades. No, I'm making up lyrics.
Okay. Then it goes Slaughter. It goes Winger. Then you got some band called Kiss with God Gave Rock and Roll to You. You got Neverland.
Their best cover, by the way. They're the best cover tune they ever did.
No, God Gave Rock and Roll to You too is a good song. Then you got Steve Vai, Faith No More, Megadeth. I didn't know The Perfect Crime was on here. That's a good song.
That was a good song.
Faith No More.
So she lights a match and pretends to sleep while everything burns.
Well, Luce, 1991, did you have fun?
I did. I really enjoyed going back in time and remembering my entire life burning down to the ground and everything being left and nothing but ashes and having no memories older than 25 years ago. And it was excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I worked in a restaurant in 1991, so.
I did, too. I also worked in fast food.
God damn it. You got to beat me.
What fast food did I also was being tormented? I worked at a Ponderosa. What do you think of that, motherfucker?
I worked at Country Kitchen.
Oh my God, that sounds worse.
And the only thing that got me through
was rock and roll.
Was rock and roll.
We touched a little bit on. By the way, this was fun.
Yes, it was a good time. We hit it was a good variety. We hit both the spandex and the flannel. Correct.
Yeah, by the way, I forgot to mention that I am wearing a sleeveless flannel right now.
You are. Excellent. I was hoping. That's what you did for the show? To get into the zone?
It's all about keeping it real, man.
Okay. Fair enough. But yeah, man, so what else did you want to cover before we kind of end this?
Well, before I say goodnight to you and wish you well on your transition to... pretty much, you're going to go about, what, two-thirds across the country?
Yeah, we didn't mention that, but yeah, the Cobra Studio, Cobra South, is moving out west. We are moving from South Florida to Colorado, Denver specifically, and I will actually probably not hate Baco as much because they seem to be, I would say, the majority of the time somebody's on tour, they go to Denver, and they do not come to South Florida. But they do go to Minnesota in the Midwest all the time, so... We'll be closer to equals, I think. Or maybe I will become dominant, and you will start to hate me and be jealous.
Well, you might hate me because now you're driving distance. I think I can hit Denver in about 10 hours. So.
Whatever, dude. But continue.
I'm there. I'm on your front porch. Luce, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, you're going to go. You're going to lose your voice if you keep using that voice. But continue. Continue. What else you got? What other band came out with an album?
We talked about For Unlawful... Carnal Knowledge, the Fuck Record,
yes.
By Van Halen.
Very clever.
You love it?
The album? I don't love it as a whole, actually. I think it's one of... I liked it then I go back to it and they have shit like Spanked and
the Spanx socks, by the way.
It's terrible. That's what I'm saying.
I heard, like, the story about how they came up with that.
And no, please tell me. Tell me.
Oh, Andy Johns, is that the guy who produced it?
Yep.
Some Englishman produced it. All I know is that, like, they were recording the music to it, and there was something wrong with the speakers in the 5150 studios.
Uh-huh.
And producer blah, blah, blah said, "Those speakers sound spanked." And so Sammy Hagar ran with it.
I see. Very inspired. The actually, it says producers, Andy, you're right, you're half right. It's Andy Johns and Ted Templeton. So I don't know if they just, like, you remixed it later or something like that.
I must be quoting Andy Johns.
So. Yeah, yeah. So it looks like both of them were on. Because I think Andy Johns was the guy that was on OU812 as well. But yeah, just to run down the tracks, you got Pound Cake.
U812?
Yeah. Ridiculous. Judgment Day, Spanked, Run Around, Pleasure Dome. Ones I've... I'll just tell
you. When you read the song titles now, I'm like, I don't think I like this record that much.
No, I remember liking this, and I went back to it, and I'll tell you this much. I've never seen this from any band, but when I saw Van Halen for the first time, they played in order Pound Cake, Judgment Day, Spanked, Run Around, and Pleasure Dome for the first five songs of the concert, and I was like, what? This is odd.
Weird.
You know what I'm saying? Like
weird.
Bizarre. It is. So do you think that we've made a case, though, a case that revisionist history, worse than Gene and Paul's, you know, recollections of what did or did not happen?
Of course I do. Yes. And anybody that disagreed with us, that still disagrees with us, is just the type of person that's always going to disagree with us.
So what do you want to do? What do you want to play?
I want to play The Dream Is Over.
So would you like to play The Dream Is Over?
I think I'm going to play The Dream Is Over. What do you got to say about that?
I think we should play The Dream Is Over. Yes. And everybody, so remember, rock's not dead. It's hiding. And you found it. Well done.
Hasta la vista, baby! We'll be right back.
Never say that about another year. I can almost promise you. So what do you think, huh? Did we convince you? Are you still thinking that if it wasn't for Kurt Cobain, Thunder would have been huge? You know what? Did things change? Absolutely they did. And there was, you know, as much as we loved all the parties and stuff, you know, there were these new bands that were creating their own waves and doing their thing. And a lot of them were coming out of Seattle. And they were talking about, you know, things of more substance in their lyrics. And that doesn't make the other bands bad. It was just time for a change. But as you saw in a lot of the examples that we listed, plenty of bands survived, especially 1991. And not only that, but they continued to, some of them even thrived beyond that. You know, we talked about Van Halen, Metallica, Skid Row, Ozzy. Tesla had a career well into the, you know, early part of the 90s, you know, even in spite of all this. So the reality was that if you were good and there was substance to what you did, there was still going to be an audience for you. It was going to be okay. But if you were largely manufactured and put together by, you know, some idea of, you know, the Sunset Strip and your fake stage name had two X's in it, well, you were probably fucked, but that had nothing to do with grunge. You were fucked by anyway, because hair metal had pretty much wore out its welcome by the start of 1991. And in that way, hair metal is largely responsible for the creation of grunge, much more than you can blame grunge for killing hair metal. But anyway, that's where we're going to leave it. I hope you had fun. I hope you're going to tune into the next podcast where we're going to talk about another greatest year in rock or something else or some random thing. Hell, if you got an idea, let us know. Maybe we'll throw it against the Cobras and Fire staff meeting and see if we can't scrap that together for you. Anyway, for Loose Cannon, this is Baco signing out. And in the words of California's greatest governor, hasta la vista, baby.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.